This episode is brought to you by Shared Interest. Shared Interest's mission is to provide finance that transforms lives, providing a hand up, not a hand out, to some of the most disadvantaged communities across the globe. By investing with Shared Interest, you can help farmers and artisans around the world earn fair incomes and trade their way out of poverty to build a fairer, more sustainable future. Shared Interest, where your money makes a world of difference. Visit the link in our show notes to learn more.
It isn't that, you know, the internet or social media is fundamentally bad or that it is fundamentally utopian and good, but actually we need to have a balanced approach and a balanced experience with using social media. And at the moment, these platforms are not designed in order for us to have a balanced relationship with them.
Welcome to The World Unspun. I'm Paula Lacey, and I'm the editorial assistant at New Internationalist. Nowadays, it's nearly impossible to imagine a life without digital technologies. They play a huge role in our work lives, our social lives, our financial lives, and more. They've also brought with them a slew of harms, such as increasing social isolation, political polarization, and rampant surveillance. All the while, major corporations rake in the profits created by our complete and self-perpetuating dependence on their devices, their platforms, and their services. In recent years, though, a growing number of academics, journalists, and digital natives, those, like me, who are barely able to remember a life before technology became ubiquitous, have begun to speak out.
I'm Adele Zeynep-Walton. I am a journalist and author of Logging Off, The Human Cost of Our Digital World. I'm also an online safety campaigner with Bereaved Families for Online Safety.
25-year-old Adele has become a prominent UK voice, calling for action to prevent online harms through her writing, campaigning, and social media presence. Her new book, Logging Off, The Human Cost of Our Digital World, is the culmination of these years of work. Through interviews with experts, campaigners, and victims of the dark side of the online world, Adele urges readers to reevaluate their relationships to digital technologies, and advocates for the regulation and restructuring of these platforms and products to protect their users. Earlier this year, before her book's release, I sat down with Adele to talk about online harms, what can be done to prevent them, and her work platform in these often overlooked stories.
So, I grew up as a Gen Z on social media. I think I didn't really have a massively critical view of social media and these companies. I had my own fair share of negative experiences online. I had experienced trolling online. I had also really struggled with body dysmorphia for like 8 years from the age of like 13 because of the type of content that I was seeing on these platforms. But until 2022, I hadn't really, I guess, understood the business model and how it fuels various types of harms in all of our lives, whoever we are.
In October 2022, Adele lost her younger sister Amy to suicide after she was drawn into an online community which encourages and instructs people on how to take their own lives. Reeling from the tragedy, Adele began to look into the forum that her sister had been visiting. It wasn't on some shadowy corner of the dark web, as you might expect. It was easily accessible, unregulated, and extremely harmful to the already vulnerable people it attracts. The more she researched, Adele soon realized that her sister had been groomed and radicalized, not just by the site, which has since been connected to at least 50 deaths in the UK alone, but also by repeated exposure to content related to self-harm and suicide, served up by predatory algorithms.
Essentially, overnight, I became a campaigner with Bereaved Families for Online Safety, which is a grassroots group started by Ian Russell, the father of Molly Russell, who sadly ended her life when she was just 14 after being bombarded with content on Pinterest and Instagram that promoted self-harm and suicide, as well as eating disorders. And since then, I've been campaigning for an online safety act that actually goes the distance in keeping people safe online and more widely around tech accountability. That experience was the catalyst for me to dive into this work as a journalist and to sort of investigate further how are other people being harmed? How are we losing out? Because I think until you experience an online harm directly, you don't really know what that even means, what it looks like. You don't realize that when you do experience that, there is no one to go to because of the tech inaccountability and because of the fact that our institutions and services have not yet caught up with the scale of the harms that are coming out of this.
When the digital world begins to threaten someone's safety, well-being, or even their life, there are very few places that you can turn. Websites, forums, and social media platforms are owned by corporations who, despite facilitating a huge portion of our interpersonal communication, have got varying approaches to content moderation and fair use. Procedures for reporting harmful content or activity are often slow and ineffective, and they rarely manage to reduce or prevent harm in time. When this inaction leads to tragedy, like Adele's family experienced, there are few routes to accountability and justice due to a lack of overarching legislation. Meta, the company that owns Facebook, is currently facing a £1.8 billion lawsuit over accusations that their algorithm promotes hateful content and incites violence. One claimant, Abram Mirag, who spoke to Adele for her book, is seeking justice for the murder of his father, a renowned professor in Ethiopia. Abram's father was killed in 2021, amid a heightened period of the Tigrayan conflict, after an anonymous Facebook account claimed that he was funding and supporting the Tigray rebel forces.
This post spread like wildfire. Abram did report it to Facebook multiple times. He expressed that it should have been taken down because he was really concerned about his father's safety. And sadly, Facebook failed to act. And within a couple of weeks, Abram's father was walking home from work and he was attacked by a mob. And this led to him being murdered. So unfortunately, the misinformation that was allowed and enabled to spread on Facebook actually led to his father's death. And as a result, his family had to flee the country and become refugees and move to America and leave their family behind. And that was just one real extreme example and real tragic case of what comes as a result of the misinformation and disinformation that's enabled to spread on these platforms.
Now, we often hear about disinformation and fake news and their relationship to politics through a Western lens, but stories like Abram's prove that this is a global problem. In issue 552 of New Internationalist, we explored how disinformation has wreaked havoc on democracy across the globe, particularly in Global South contexts with less stable information ecosystems. In fact, you can revisit the first episode of this podcast to hear guest editor Nanjala Nyabola talk about this more. Yet the owners of these platforms are able to continuously evade responsibility for the role that their algorithms play in stoking tensions, promoting divisive and polarizing content, and allowing harmful rhetoric to spread rapidly, sometimes with deadly consequences.
Fundamentally, misinformation, disinformation, and extreme content is part of the business model of these platforms because their algorithms are designed to maximize engagement, whatever the cost. So these algorithms do not determine or decipher between harmful or healthy content or content that is true or false because they are solely designed with the purpose of keeping us scrolling. And sadly, as well, because of the negativity bias that we have as human beings, often content that engages us is content that is extreme, that is negative, that is potentially offensive or gruesome. So those two things are interacting together, you know, the design of these platforms, but also at the same time, our own internal biases towards content that is extreme and having that natural intrigue that humans do have when it comes to this type of content. In 2018, for example, research at MIT found that fake news is 70% more likely to be retweeted than true news. And it takes true news 6 times longer to reach 1,500 people. So it is essentially these platforms continue to profit from content that is false, but also that polarizes us in society and that fuels the divisions that are already being reaped and sowed by, you know, far right politicians or right wing media, and they are contributing to a wider spread of far right rhetoric.
Around the world, the far right is surging, from Trump back in the White House to new strong men in Argentina and El Salvador to the wave sweeping across Europe. In this age of crisis, despair is the fuel of authoritarianism, and it's our world that is paying the price. I'm Beth, a co-editor at New Internationalist and the lead editor of our latest edition on the global far right. We dig into what's driving this rise and expose the shadowy network smuggling the politics of hate and division into the halls of power. It can all feel really overwhelming, like nothing can be done. But there is hope. From mutual aid in Argentina to labour-led anti-fascist organising in the United States, communities are standing up and proving that another future is possible. This edition was supported by more than 900 readers who backed our Rewire the World campaign. Thank you so much for fueling people-powered independent journalism. To get your hands on a copy, you can subscribe today with the code THEWORLDUNSPUN for 20% off your first year, print or digital. Just follow the link in our show notes.
When researchers talk about social media algorithms, they're often described as black boxes because of the opacity and secrecy about how they actually function and how often they're updated. What we do know is that recommendation algorithms are complicated equations with a simple objective: to strategically promote content to users in order to maximize engagement. Engagement is measured through likes, shares, comments, clicks, and even the time spent watching a video or lingering on a post to read the caption. As Adele says, this means that content which elicits a strong reaction, for whatever reason, will be promoted, allowing for negative, harmful, and divisive posts to spread faster than others. There are also more insidious ways that these algorithms decide what content to promote and to who. By collecting data on user demographics, history, and activity, identifying what they stop scrolling to watch or what they seek out, platforms build complex profiles which inform what is put on a user's feed. In her book Logging Off, Adele dedicates an entire chapter to gendered digital harms and how technology has enabled new forms of misogyny. Predatory algorithms play a huge role in this. Whether that's young women being bombarded with weight loss content or accounts promoting disordered eating, or young men's homepages being flooded with reactionary creators like Andrew Tate. However, digitally enabled misogyny goes beyond social media platforms and their algorithms. One growing example that Adele explores is smart abuse, or technology-facilitated abuse, where features of digital technologies are exploited to facilitate forms of domestic violence.
So through smart devices, the person that I interviewed was being essentially harassed by her ex-partner through her smart home. So through her Hive camera, which she had initially installed to keep her safe, which a lot of us do. You know, we use smart technologies because we're taught and told through these technologies, you know, through these companies' marketing, that these are things that are going to keep us safe. So she installed this to protect her and her child, and the ex-partner and the abuser was actually hacking this Hive camera in order to watch her, listen to her conversations from within her home. She was being stalked through her car's tracking app, which is, you know, a technology that, again, is supposed to empower users and, you know, enable more convenience in your life. A lot of these, you know, overlaps through the technologies that are now being used to harm us is that they are being sold to us as the solution, as the silver bullet.
Smart homes are in part designed to gather vast amounts of data about your domestic habits, under the marketing guise of safety and convenience. Whether by oversight or intention, those data gathering features, tracking, filming, and listening, ultimately pose an even larger threat to user safety when in the wrong hands. On top of this, AI image generation tools have led to a meteoric rise in new forms of online sexual abuse. Using easily accessible, low-cost, or even free apps, it's now possible to remove someone's clothes in a photo or to generate deepfake pornography. When it comes to tackling this, legislation often places the onus on the victims to report cases of abuse, such as the recent Take It Down Act in the US, which was passed in May of this year. As Adele points out, these approaches are too little, too late, and they fail to address the tools themselves and the companies behind them.
There is such a sheer scale and widening gap between the protections that we have for people and the technologies that are being released into the market without us questioning what the impact these are going to have on society. And I think that's one of the main issues here, is that we have relentless innovation and relentless digital technologies being released and put out into the market because of how profitable it is. And at the same time, we now have a growing scale of victims who are being targeted through these technologies and harassed through these technologies because no one has paused to ask what legislation is in place to protect these people, what legislation is in place to prevent these harms and crimes from happening, and also blind spots in the design process around technologies.
In her campaigning and in her book, Adele advocates for the adoption of trauma-informed design principles. This means that during the design process for new technologies, all of the ways in which a product may be weaponized for abuse or other forms of harm is identified and prevented. Now, it could be that this practice is uncommon in Silicon Valley at the moment due to a lack of diversity or sensitivity amongst engineers or CEOs. However, it largely boils down to the fact that, at the moment, preventing harm isn't profitable, because as it stands, there are next to no consequences.
Hi, I'm Amy Hall, and I'm one of the co-editors at New Internationalist magazine. We're fiercely independent, and we're able to stay that way thanks to the incredible support of our readers and over 4,600 co-owners. By buying community shares in our cooperative, readers can fund in-depth, high-quality journalism which confronts injustice on a global scale. If this sounds exciting to you, visit our website, newint.org, to find out more.
In the early days of internet forums, moderators were concerned about the potential legal ramifications of content posted by users. As a result, in 1996, the United States passed Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. This designated online forums as content hosts rather than publishers, allowing them to evade the standards and regulations placed on traditional media. To this day, because the majority of these companies are based in the US, this outdated policy continues to protect tech companies from being held accountable for harmful content and their role in its propagation.
Now we have a digital ecosystem where huge multi-billion dollar companies are allowed to say, well, we're not publishers. We're just the hosts of this content, so we're not liable for any of the harms that have unfolded because of what has been spread on our platform. And that totally needs to be changed because, you know, these companies are extremely different to the old internet that existed when this piece of legislation came in, but they are now using that piece of legislation as a loophole to get out of any accountability around the types of content that is allowed to spread. I think this is something that everyone needs to know about so that we can be like, hang on a second, this isn't right. We have these platforms which, you know, are fueling political polarization. They're fueling like riots and genocide in the offline world. And they are saying that they're not publishers so that nothing can happen to them. You know, that's totally, totally wrong.
Abram Mirag's case against Meta is a world first. In part because it's in a Nairobi court, because at the time of his father's murder, much of Facebook's content moderation took place in Kenya. This case can be used as an example of why these companies with global influence cannot be held to account only by national legislation. Yet, the oversized wealth, power, and influence of the tech industry, and the proximity of these companies to global decision-making, allows these companies to act with impunity. In the past year alone, we've seen tech moguls align themselves with right-wing figures and ideologies. From Elon Musk's short-lived stint in Trump's government to Mark Zuckerberg's enthusiastic embrace of free speech libertarianism.
I think, you know, that moment where we saw at Trump's inauguration, like we saw all the tech bros there, I think that was like a real awakening for us in that, like, realizing these seats of power are so interconnected and actually, you know, communication platforms that we have and that we use every single day are not neutral. They are political. They are companies that have their own agenda. And of course, their main agenda is making more profit. But I think that's why we've seen, you know, tech shifting to the right is not only because maybe a lot of them do have right wing, you know, values at the core, but it's also because they are willing to do anything to avoid legislation and to avoid being regulated against.
When accused of causing harm, companies like Meta point to their content moderation policies as a sort of get-out-of-jail-free card. However, these procedures are rife with contradictions. They are inconsistently applied, easily influenced and manipulated by political power, and they rely on outsourced and exploitative labor. Behind the scenes, platforms like Facebook employ thousands of subcontracted digital laborers, predominantly based in the Global South, to train their moderation algorithms by manually sifting through flagged and often graphic content. Meta has faced multiple global lawsuits from content moderation workers, subjected to low wages, unlawful union busting, and exposure to extremely traumatic content without adequate psychological care. Besides this glaringly obvious human cost, algorithmic content moderation can also easily veer into censorship. Throughout the genocide in Gaza, Palestinian and pro-Palestine content creators have reported being shadow banned on Instagram, where their followers are no longer shown their content. On top of this, amidst rising hostility to LGBTQI+ communities in the US and globally, queer and trans creators are increasingly having their content flagged as sexual and restricted for violating community guidelines. Clearly, moderation alone is not a watertight or just solution, and the rightward shift in big tech heightens these stakes. Throughout proposed solutions for online safety, there is a pattern of overemphasizing users by limiting certain accounts or implementing reporting procedures, rather than identifying the platforms and their design as the source of harm. Instead, many legislative approaches, such as those in the UK and Australia, push for restrictive measures, like age verification procedures and smartphone or social media bans, as a way to protect young people online.
What we're seeing with like the popularity of like smartphone bans, social media bans, like very like strict and all-encompassing sort of solutions to the harms that we're seeing coming out of social media are definitely a band-aid solution. Any of us can be vulnerable at any point in our lives to being sucked down a rabbit hole or being exposed to harmful and graphic content. So, you know, we need to be talking about our collective rights rather than just children's safety, because this is a human rights issue. It's not just a safety issue and it's not just a children's issue. We need a much more a united approach between all generations saying, look, like we want social media that is safe for everyone. And that could be done if we banned addictive design.
As we've already discussed, engagement-driven recommendation algorithms can be hugely damaging to users and online discourse. However, these algorithms are part of a larger picture of addictive design, which Adele believes is one of the most dangerous aspects of social media.
It's those features that make social media a bit like a gambling slot machine. It's the infinite scroll, it's the autoplay features. It's the, you know, like buttons being green and dislike being red, and all of those types of features that might seem quite insignificant, but actually psychologically so much is going on for us as users when we are scrolling through social media that has these features. And I think actually you don't realize how addictive those things are until they're removed.
These harmful features are deliberate and largely in service of profit. These platforms have become a major vehicle for advertising, so they're incentivized to keep users on their sites in order to maximize revenue. Since my conversation with Adele, the UK Online Safety Act came into effect in late July. Now, social media and other internet platforms are required to implement safety measures to protect children, or they will face large fines. However, in practice, this has largely resulted in stricter age verification procedures being introduced across a variety of platforms and sites for any content deemed mature. Whilst this may limit exposure to pornography or other harmful content, the scope of what is considered inappropriate is wide-reaching. Age verification procedures are hugely costly to implement, threatening not-for-profit sites like Wikipedia, and they also involve providing IDs, photographs, and other types of personal information, which lead critics to be concerned about the Act's implications on privacy. And, as Adele said, children and young people are not the only groups vulnerable to online harms. The Act, as it stands, seems to allow platforms to gather even more personal data from its users under the guise of reducing harms, rather than tackling the problem at its source. Whilst many of us have grown accustomed to the harmful features built into the online world, Adele wants to remind us that it doesn't have to be this way. Social media can be designed with user well-being and connection in mind.
Our digital rights need to be viewed in the same way and treated in the same way that our human rights are. I think the only right that tech companies supposedly care about is freedom of speech. And I think that's why this debate around online safety versus freedom of speech is so polarizing is because tech companies weaponize this freedom of speech thing in order to evade any accountability for the harms that are unfolding because of the content that is on their platforms. I think if content was moderated in a way where, you know, it was determined, does this content violate people's not only, you know, right to freedom of expression, but right to life, like right to exist in a safe way, all of those other rights that we have and we have language for when it comes to the offline world, we haven't yet translated that into the online world. And I don't know why we have that gap, because it's not as if these two things are separate now. Like, they are forever intertwined. I think if we had a global institution that was responsible for that, we could pool all of our resources, all of our money, all of our expertise that each nation has into a global force that is actually able to take on these tech companies. That is my vision. And I think we're a long way from it. But I think the challenges that we're going to see now with enforcing online safety legislation that varies across countries and continents, I think maybe that might shift the conversation so that we can actually be like, this isn't enough. We need a much more broader scale approach to digital rights and digital well-being as well.
In her book, Adele briefly touches on the Luddites, my favourite misunderstood 19th century workers' movement, who are known for destroying automated textile machinery. Although consigned to history as anti-progress, the Luddites were precisely targeting the factories which used technology to disempower and exploit their workers. This critical framework, where we can recognise when new technologies are not serving their users or the wider community, is one that we could all make use of when we think about our relationship to technology and the online world, whatever your age. It opens the door to thinking about collective refusal, or, as Adele's book title hints, the power of just logging off.
What we're seeing is that it's a double-edged sword, and I think that's where we need to have more nuance in the conversation. It isn't that, you know, the internet or social media is fundamentally bad, or that it is fundamentally utopian and good, but actually we need to have a balanced approach and a balanced experience with using social media. And at the moment, these platforms are not designed in order for us to have a balanced relationship with them.
That was Adele Zeynep Walton, a journalist, online safety campaigner, and the author of Logging Off, The Human Cost of Our Digital World, which is available to buy now. If you would like to take an immediate action on the issues discussed in this episode, you can utilize your right to object to Meta using your personal data for direct marketing using the link in the show notes. If you're looking to get involved in the movement against big tech, there are some organizations linked there too. Adele has also been touring her book this summer, with more talks yet to be announced. So check out her website to find any upcoming dates near you. Thank you for listening to The World Unspun. You can subscribe to New Internationalist using the link in the show notes. Don't forget to use the code TheWorldUnspun at checkout for 20% off the first year of your print or digital subscription. This episode was hosted and produced by me, Paula Lacey, the editorial assistant at New Internationalist. Co-editors of our magazine are Amy Hall, Bethany Riley, Conrad Landon, and Nick Dowson, and our digital editor is Maxine Betteridge-Mose. Our theme music was produced by Samuel Raphael Williams, and our logo design is by Mary Foos. Audio editing is by Nazik Hamza. Thanks, and we'll see you again next time.